Thank you very much. And I'm glad to be here with you this morning. Asarah B'Teves, which we'll be observing in a couple of days, tends to get, I was about to say, a bit of a bad rap. Not really a bad rap, but we tend to view it as rather minor in the world of fast days of Ta'aneisim, partially because of how short and easy it is. Most of us, I think, are familiar with the basic event that generates the fast of Asarah B'Teves, the beginning of the siege of Yerushalayim at the time of the first Churban Beis HaMikdash. What I'd like to do today is dig a little deeper into the meaningfulness of that event, particularly how it's presented in Sefer Yechezkel, and develop from that two elements of Asarah B'Teves that make it rather special. One from a perspective, as I called it in the title, in a sense in which it's the quintessential Tainus, the quintessential fast day, and another in which it represents something particularly important in Jewish history that that has echoes for us throughout and certainly today as well. With all that in mind, though, I'd like to begin the first few minutes of our time here by focusing on a halachic issue with regard to Asarah B'Teves. I'm actually curious. I know I grew up with a certain impression about this halacha and Asarah B'Teves, and I'm curious whether or not I'm the only one. Is there anything, if you've already flipped through the source sheet, you might have already picked up on it, but is there anything with regard to the halachos of fast days that's unique to Asarah B'Teves that anybody has encountered? Yeah. I'm sorry? It can't be rescheduled for a different calendar date? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Meaning what? Well, why would it be rescheduled?
It falls on Shabbos or
It falls on Shabbos or?
I think it's usually on Nisan.
Okay. So that if, and I, that's exactly what I grew up hearing also, right? That Asarah B'Teves is different from the other fast days in that the other fast days, other than Yom Kippur, of course, if it comes out on Shabbos, it has to be pushed off. This happens all the time with Tisha B'Av and with Shavasar B'Tammuz and with Tzom Gedalia. All three of those fast days rather often come out on Shabbos, and we don't fast on Shabbos, we fast on Sunday instead. Tanis Esther, can come out on Shabbos, and in that context, rather than pushing it off, we push it back to Thursday. Okay, there's another thing, and now we're gonna look at that issue in a moment. There's another aspect of Asarah B'Teves that's not necessarily halachically different from other fast days, but is in our life different from other fast days.
You're, it's only fast on a Friday.
Okay, so it's also the only fast day which we fast on a Friday. Is that, you know, is that really true as a matter of halacha?
No,
I'm sorry? Okay, Tanis B'Chorim, right, comes out on a Friday. In fact, several years ago, when Pesach came out on Shabbos, I was the rabbi of a shul at the time, and like many rabbis and gabbayim, I used the Ezra's Torah, you know, luach. Actually, you know what? I don't think it was the Ezra's Torah luach. I think it might have been the OU calendar that I'm thinking of. I think it was the OU calendar. And they printed the Tanis B'Chorim as being pushed back to Thursday in the calendar, which was a mistake. The Tanis B'Chorim is in fact held on Friday, and which caused some ruckus because people had planned their siyumim, you know, to and attendance at siyumim as a result. But of course, Tanis B'Chorim always comes out on Erev Yontif, right? And yet obviously we fast in Erev Yontif, and we fast in Erev Shabbos too. But the fact is, as a matter of halacha, that is just a coincidence, right? There is no halacha that you only fast on Friday when it's Asarah B'Teves and not the other fast days. It just happens to be that the other fast days in our calendar never come out on Friday, and in that sense, it isn't unique. Okay, so let's take a look at this issue in the Makoro. So we start here on page 1 with a Mishnah in Maseches Megillah that's in the context of the issue of pushing off or back Purim when it comes out on Shabbos. So the Mishnah says Tisha B'Av ma'achrin v'lo makdimin, that when Tisha B'Av comes out on Shabbos, we push it off till later, till Sunday, rather than pushing it earlier. There is, by the way, one opinion in the Tanaim that held that when Tisha B'Av comes out on Shabbos, you just skip it altogether and don't observe it at all. But we follow the opinion in this Mishnah that Tisha B'Av gets pushed later to Sunday. the Gemara, in that one line that's highlighted down at the bottom, explains the reason. Why do we push it later rather than earlier? Tisha B'Av Vakdumei Puranos Lo Makadmi. That since Tisha B'Av is obviously a day of Puranos, a day in which we commemorate troubles and catastrophes that happened to the Jewish people, that's not something that we want to encounter sooner. It's rather something we'd rather push off for later. Now, the Mishnah says this only about Tisha B'Av, and Chazal never say anything about the other Ta'anesim. What do you do when they come out on Shabbos? So Rashi on the Mishnah, highlighted on the side of the page, says, Tisha B'Av Shecholios B'Shabbos, V'hu Hadin L'Yidzayin B'Tammuz U'L'Asar B'Teves, and so too with regard to Shavasar B'Tammuz and Asar B'Teves, that if they come out on Shabbos, they get pushed off to Sunday. The reason why Tisha B'Av was singled out in the Mishnah was because of the degree to which Tisha B'Av is a day of multiple troubles in the course of a history, multiple tragedies, and so on, that even Tisha B'Av is pushed off until Sunday, but the others are pushed off until Sunday as well. So Rashi, in fact, holds that if Asara B'Teves comes out on Shabbos, you don't fast on Shabbos. It's the same as the other Ta'anesim, and you push it off until Sunday. The Rambam, at the bottom of the page, says similarly in Hilchos HaTanios, V'imchal Yud Gimel Ba'adar, if Tanis Esther Lios B'Shabbos comes out on Shabbos, Makdimin, we make it earlier, U'misanin B'chamishi Shu Yid Aleph, and we fast on Thursday, which is the 11th day of Adar. Aval Echad Me Arba Yemei Hatzomos, Shechol Yos B'Shabbos, but one of the other four fast days that comes out on Shabbos, Dochen Oso La'achar HaShabbos. We push it off till Sunday, and Chol Yos B'Erev Shabbos, M'Sanon B'Erev Shabbos, but it comes out on Friday, we fast on Friday. So both Rashi and the Rambam, in both Rashi and the Rambam, there's no Zecher, there's no mention of any distinction between Asara B'Teves and the other fast days. In fact, they explicitly paskin that Asara B'Teves one would not fast on Shabbos, just like the other fast days. And in fact, in all of the generally traditional Sifrei Rishonim, that is the presumption, with one exception. We turn to page 2, which is at the top of the page, which is the Avudraham. The Avudraham, who was a contemporary of the Rashba in Spain, and wrote a very important sefer on the halachos and the minhagim of davening. And there he says, "V'chiluk yesh b'nehem." There's a difference among the different fast days. Sharba satzomos heim nidchim lifamim kishachalu b'Shabbos. The fast days are pushed off sometimes when they come out on Shabbos. Chutz me'asara b'teves, except for asara b'teves, she'eino chal la'olam b'Shabbos. Asara b'teves on our calendar, our fixed calendar of the last couple of thousand years, never actually comes out on Shabbos. Avahu chalif amim biyom shishi, it sometimes comes out on Friday, umis'anin bo bayom, and we fast on Friday. But then he adds the following, vafilu hayu chal b'Shabbos, even if it were to come out on Shabbos, lo hayu yicholun l'chosol yom acher, we wouldn't have been able to push it off to another day, mipnei she'ne'emar bo, because the pasuk in Yechezkel says, be'etzem hayom hazeh, that the fast is, that happened, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, probably a loose translation into English, on this very day. There's an emphasis, dafka, on this day that it happened. And as a result, he says, this fast day can't be held on any other day. It has to be on this day, and we would fast even on Shabbos, kemo b'Yom HaKippurim, just like on Yom Kippur, which we fast on Shabbos. Now, when he says, just like Yom Kippur, what does he mean by that? I'm sorry? What does he mean by just like Yom Kippur? Right, so the simple meaning of Avudraham is he's just pointing out that this is similar to Yom Kippur. The reason we fast on Yom Kippur when it comes out on Shabbos is not for the same reason, right? Because Yom Kippur is a din d'oraisa, and the Torah is telling us to fast on this day, and the implication is that you have to fast even if it's Shabbos, when it sometimes comes out. It's not even clear that there's a chiyuv to eat on Shabbos midoraisa, right? So Yom Kippur, obviously, we fast on Shabbos. And this Avudraham is mentioned by the Beis Yosef, quoted, and the Beis Yosef says, but I don't know where he got this from, this idea that Asara B'Teves, we fast even on Shabbos. Now, there are two other citations to this, there are two other mentions or sources for this position that Asara B'Teves is Docha Shabbos in some more obscure sources. The second source here is a work on the halachos of tefillah. It says here, Le'echa mitalmidi Rabbeinu Yona. This was a manuscript that was found at some point and published within the last 30 years by Mekitzei Nirdamim, which is a group publisher in Israel that publishes long-lost Torah manuscripts. And there, so this is written by a student of Rabbeinu Yona, which is around the same time as the Avodraham, maybe a little bit earlier. And he says the following, he says, the reason why the fixed calendar was set up so that Asara B'Teves won't come out on Shabbos was for this reason. Because if it were to come out on Shabbos, he wouldn't have been able to switch it to a different day. And we would have been required to fast on Shabbos. Mipnei she'nemar lanavi alav hashalom, because it says to Yechezkel, k'sov lecha shem hayom es etzem hayom hazeh samach melech bavel al Yerushalayim. So this source from around the same time in Spain also has this position that Asara B'Teves would be docha Shabbos. He would fast on Shabbos if Asara B'Teves came out on Shabbos. And says even further that's the reason why the calendar was set up this way, because we didn't want to have to fast on Shabbos. So the calendar was set up in order to avoid the scenario. Finally, this is the Sefer at the bottom called Sefer Tikkun Yisachar, which is from a later period. It's from he's a contemporary of the Beis Yosef, actually, and lived in Tzfat also in the late 16th century. The reason why this source is significant is for two reasons. Number one, as you see, the highlighted part of it begins, B'tshuvos haga'onim zal, sha'afilu ilu chal zehatzom shel teves, b'shabes atzmo, lo hayinu yecholin lidchoso, mimenu klal lo lahaktim v'lo la'acher. He says the same thing as the Avudraham and as this Talmud Rabbeinu Yonah, but he quotes it from a tshuva sa gaonim, which is very interesting. We don't have, as far as I know, this tshuva of the gaonim. But if in fact he had in front of him a tshuva of the gaonim that had this position, then in fact this opinion goes back much further and has roots much earlier in history. He also adds another angle to this. We would have fasted on Shabbos, on Asar B'Teves, just like Yom Kippur, which when it comes out on Shabbos. But then he adds, "Dichsivbo," because it says in the pasuk, "Ben Adam ksov lecha shem hayom es etzem hayom hazeh." K'mo shekasev b'tanish Yom Kippurim be'etzem hayom hazeh. Right. He gives a different angle on the connection between Asara B'Teves and Yom Kippur, because it happens to be that the phrase Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh appears in the Torah about Yom Kippur. And so he sees that as the connection between Yom Kippur and Asara B'Teves, that just as Yom Kippur is Docha Shabbos, so too Asara B'Teves, which also has that phrase associated with it, is Docha Shabbos. So that's an interesting angle on that issue, although I'm not convinced necessarily that that's what the Avodraham had in mind when he mentioned the connection with Yom Kippur. So now, in fact, how do we paskin about this issue? So we clearly paskin like the mainstream view, not like this odd view that appears in the Avodraham and these obscure sources, but as one would expect. We follow the Rashi and the Rambam and the Beis Yosef. You remember I mentioned quotes the Avodraham and says, I don't know where he got it from. And so in the Shulchan Aruch, the Psak is in fact that were Asara B'Teves to come out on Shabbos, we would push it off to Sunday, just like all of the other fast days. The reason why I think I grew up hearing this notion that Asara B'Teves is Docha Shabbos is because, first of all, it never happens, so it doesn't matter, and that's the more interesting view, so it's the one that people talk about, but it is in fact not whom the halacha follows. But what I'd like to do, and this to now segue into the main portion of this shiur, is there a clock in here? Is that clock accurate? Okay, good. Is to try to answer the question according to that view that Asara B'Tevis one would fast even on Shabbos, is to try to answer the question of why would that be? We don't normally think of Asara B'Tevis as a particularly serious fast day in relation to the others. In fact, we usually have in our heads a kind of hierarchy of the fast days in which Asara B'Tevis is the beginning, and it leads up to Shivasar B'Tammuz, which was worse historically, and which leads up to Tisha B'Av, which was the worst historically, and then it leads to Tzom Gedalia, which was the last step, which was already not quite as necessarily as catastrophic as Tisha B'Av, but which was kind of the final blow at the end of the story. We normally think of Asara B'Tevis as the beginning. So why would the Asara B'Tevis be the one which is Docha Shabbos? There, you would think that there's more to this phrase, Etzem Hayom Hazeh, than just a kind of technicality. But what we're going to be exploring and trying to understand here certainly has significance and meaning, even if we don't end up with this halacha that Asara B'Tevis overrides Shabbos, and therefore is meaningful even without that particular view, which, as I mentioned, we don't paskin like. Okay, now, for some reason, when these pages were printed, the highlighting didn't show up on the rest of the pages, so I apologize for that. We will have to... I'll have to just tell you which perek and pasuk to be looking at. Let's just start for just one moment to look on page 6, at Yechezkel, perek chaf dalid, just to see the pasuk that all of those Rishonim were quoting. So Yechezkel, perek chaf dalid begins, V'ahi dvar Hashem elai, b'shana ha-tshi'is, b'chodesh ha-asiri, b'asar l'chodesh, Hashem said to me, in the ninth year, in the tenth month, which is Teves, Be'asar L'chodesh, on the tenth of the month, the tenth day of the tenth month, Asar B'Teves, Ben Adam, which is the way that Hashem always addresses Yechezkel, K'sav L'cha Eshem Hayom, write down the name of today, as Etzem Hayom Hazeh, this very day, Samach Melech Bavel Yerushalayim Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, on this very day, the king of Bavel began to besiege Yerushalayim. So that's the pasuk that's being discussed in all of those Rishonim. What I'd like to do is give us a bit of a more expansive understanding of the place of this pasuk in the sweep of the story of the Churban HaBayis, and specifically in the sweep of the story of Yechezkel HaNavi in this context. And we're going to be spending a bunch of time during the next 40 minutes learning. To some degree, this perek of Sefer Yechezkel. But first, let's look a little bit at the broader context. You'll notice that this first pasuk here in Perek Chaf Dalet says that this communication to Yechezkel happened in the ninth year, Bashana Hachiis. So, what does that mean? What's the ninth year? So, when we see a year number in the Nevi'im, what is that usually being counted from? Right, usually to the reign of a certain king. Right? Okay, so what we need to do is look in the broader context of Sefer Yechezkel and figure out when is this happening and that what stage historically is this going on. So if you turn back to page 3, to the opening lines of Sefer Yechezkel at the top of the page, it says, Vayihi bishloshim shana, in the 30th year, Varavi b'chamisha l'chodesh, and the fifth day of the fourth month, the fifth day of Tammuz. Va'ani b'soch ha-golah al nahar kivar. Right. So where was Yechezkel? Yechezkel, unlike the other and all of the other Nevi'im, Yechezkel lived in Chutz-Laaretz. Yechezkel was in Bavel, in the Golah, in the exile. And at that point, niftchu ha-shamayim ve'maros elokim. So remember, so how did he start out? Saying this was the 30th year. So the 30th year of what? Okay. So if we continue into the next pasuk, he says, "B'chamisha l'chodesh, the fifth of the month." He repeats that. "Hi hashana ha-chamishis l'golus ha-melech Yoyachin." That was the fifth year, counting from the exile of King Yoyachin. Now, if this was the fifth year since the exile of King Yoyachin, which we'll get back to in a moment, what was the 30th year that he was speaking of at the beginning? What do you think? Right? It would be hard to believe that it was the 30th year of the king, since if Yehoyachin, who was one of the kings, right, was just exiled 5 years ago. That means there was a new king 5 years ago. Who is the king? So the answer is right there in the first pasuk. Where was Yechezkel? Yechezkel was in Bavel. So when he was counting the years, he was counting the years as they were counted in Bavel, right? So Shloshim Yom, Shloshim Shana means 30 years counting from the reign of the king in Bavel, not a Jewish king, okay? Because that's how they counted time where Yechezkel was. But then he adds, in order to put it in a more Jewish context, he says the 30th year of the reign of the king of Bavel was the same as the 5th year since our exile from Yerushalayim. Since the exile of King Yehoyachin. And later in the Sefer, when he refers to years, he's using the count of the years since the exile, since the galus of Yehoyachin. And so in the pasuk that we read before, when he said, Be'atzem Hayom Hazeh, that when Hashem said that to him, it said the 9th year, that meant the 9th year since the galus of Yehoyachin. And it's in that context that Yechezkel begins to have his nevuos, as happens in the next pasuk here in Pasuk Gimel. Okay, so let's now, as one more bit of introduction before we get back to Perek Chaf Dalet and Yechezkel, let's look at Sefer a little bit at the end of Sefer Melachim and see where all of this fits in. Let me just take one moment. There certainly might very well be people in the room who are students of Tanakh and are familiar with the basic information that I'm presenting here. Within the next few minutes, we will be moving on to something a little bit more detailed. Just give me bear with me as we do a little bit more introduction here. So, if you turn to page 4, which is near the end of Sefer Melachim, where the story of the last few kings of Yehuda is being told. So if you start, again, I apologize for the lack of highlighting, but if you look at Pasuk Zion, the last Pasuk of the first paragraph on the top of the page, that last Pasuk says that the Lo Hosif Od Melech Mitzrayim Latzeis Me'artzo, the king of Egypt, had stopped foraying out of his country to make war. Ki Lakach Melech Bavel Minacham Mitzrayim Ad Nahar Paras. Basically, the point is that there at the time was a battle of, you know, powers in the Middle East, and Egypt had been the strong power at the time. But now the Babylonians were pushing the Egyptians out of power, and as always, the land of Israel was stuck in between, and the armies were always crossing from one to the other to get from Asia to Africa and from Africa to Asia. And at this point, the Babylonians were the ones taking over, and so now the ones that the country and the army that was going to be giving trouble to the Jews would be the ones coming from the north and the east in Bavel, not from the south and the west in Egypt. So Ben Shmonesrei Shani Yehoyachin B'Malcho, Yehoyachin became the king at the age of 18. And he only lasted for 3 months. And Pasuk Yud, Ba'esahi, at that time, Allah Adei Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel Yerushalayim, the generals and the armies of Nebuchadnezzar came to Yerushalayim, Vatavohir Ba'matzor, and the city was besieged. And then the Nebuchadnezzar himself came. And Pasuk Yud Beis at the end of the line, Vayetze Yehoyachin Melech Yehuda al Melech Bavel. And Yehoyachin went out to try to fight. It actually doesn't say he tried to fight. But he went out to Melech Bavel. Vayikach oso Melech Bavel b'shnas shmona l'malcho. And in the 8th year of his reign, Yehoyachin was taken by the king of Bavel, by Nebuchadnezzar. And the next few psukim describe that Nebuchadnezzar basically emptied Yerushalayim of all of its riches and all of its important people. He took all of the treasures of the Beis Hamikdash, and of the palace. And he took all of the gold utensils that Shlomo HaMelech had made for the Beis Hamikdash, and he cut them up into pieces, presumably in order to melt them down and to get the gold. He exiled all of the leaders and the military, 10,000 people, v'chol ha'charash v'hamasger, which means the craftsmen and basically all the people who would be able to build weapons, the blacksmiths. V'lo nishar zulas dalas amharas. The only people who were left were the weak and the poor, and he brought all of these people to Bavel. And the last pasuk of that parsha, pasuk Yudzayin, Vayamlech Melech Bavel as Matanya Dodo Tachtav, the Melech Bavel Nebuchadnezzar installed as the new king in his place, Matanya, his uncle, who was Yoachin's uncle, who was Matanya, who was a son of Yoshiyahu, Vayasev Shemot Tzidkiyahu, and he changed his name to Tzidkiyahu, obviously a puppet king for Nebuchadnezzar. A lot of us are probably, if you're not familiar with Sefer Melachim itself, are familiar with this whole story of the Golos of Yehoyachin because of its mention in Megillas Esther as having been the background of the family of Mordechai having been exiled at the time of Golos Yehoyachin. So Yechezkel was among these important people that had been exiled at the time of the Golos Yehoyachin when much of the greats in terms of both the people and the materiel that was in Yerushalayim was taken by Nebuchadnezzar to Bavel. And if you look at the very last line of this page, we see in the original narrative story what happened in Yerushalayim on Asar B'Teves, Bishnas Hatshi'is L'Malcho, right, the ninth year of the reign of Tzidkiyahu, which is the same as the ninth year of the exile of Yehoyachin, which is what Yechezkel had been talking about. B'Chodesh Asiri B'Asar L'Chodesh and Asar B'Teves, Bad Nebuchadnezzar, turns the page, Melech Bavel, Hu L'Chol Chelo El Yerushalayim, he and all of his armies came upon Yerushalayim, Vayichan Aleha, and they camped around it, Vayivnu Aleha Dayek Saviv, and they built like fortresses, forts, around it, in order Vatavoyer Bamatzor, and in order to besiege the city. So that's the story itself of what happened on Asar B'Teves. And what happened, and now turning to the next page, on page 6, what happens in Yechezkel is in Bavel. Yechezkel's not in Yerushalayim, so he's unaware of what's going on there. And there obviously was no instant communication. And so Hashem appears to Yechezkel on Asar B'Teves on the same day that the siege of Yerushalayim is beginning, and it tells him, write down this date, because on this very day, right now, in Yerushalayim, this is what's happening. Okay. So, with that context in mind, let's spend a few minutes seeing, besides just informing Yechezkel of what was happening in Yerushalayim that day, let's see what message it is that Hashem gives Yechezkel that day. And as we will see, this message that Hashem gives Yechezkel that day is particularly significant because it's the last message that Hashem gives to Yechezkel about the Jewish people for a very long time. So he says to him, after telling him what's happening in Yerushalayim, starting in Pasuk Gimel, he says, "Umashol el beis hameri mashal." Give a mashal, a parable to the rebellious people. The Amar Talihem, and you should say to them, "Ko Amar Hashem Elokim." This is what Hashem said: "Shifos hasir shifos." Take the pot, big pot, and put it on the fire, put it on the stove. "V'gam yitzok bo mayim," and put water in it. "Esof nesachah eleha," put nesachah means cuts of meat. Put into the pot, kol nesach tov, all the best cuts, yarech, the chaseif, the leg, the shoulder, mivchar atzamim malei, and put the best of the bones into the pot also, right? The good bones, the ones that are edible, that have some flavor in them, the kinds you put in your chalent. Mivchar hatzon lakawach, take the best of the sheep, also to put it, v'gam dur hatzamim tachteha, and you put the other bones underneath to build the flame. Ratach resacheha, and boil it up, gamba shluat samel besocha, and cook even the bones in the pot. So that's the mashal. What's the nimshal? What's this a reference to? Pot, the meat, the bones. So he explains in the very next paragraph. Lachin ko amar Hashem Elokim oy ir hadamim, the city of blood. Sir asher chelasava vechelasali yatsami mena, the pot whose stench. Disgusting stuff, meaning it has not left it. So what's the seer? What's the pot? The pot is the ear, hadamim, meaning, of course, Yerushalayim. Right? So this is a description of the city of Yerushalayim. The pot is like the walls of Yerushalayim, and the meat that's in the pot is the people that are inside Yerushalayim. And it happens to be that earlier in Sefer Yechezkel, much earlier, the people had spoken of had used this same mashal of the pot and the meat inside as a good thing. The people who didn't believe that Yerushalayim would ever be destroyed were saying that, you know, we're inside and the walls will protect us, the walls of the pot. But Hashem is now turning this back at them in a rather dramatic way. And he goes on and continues. Right, you thought that the pot was going to protect you, but instead, all the best pieces of meat were taken out. Right, meaning what? That's a reference to the Galus Yehoyachin. Right, you thought the walls would protect you. Instead, Nebuchadnezzar came and he took you out, and now you're not in there anymore. The next couple of psukim describe how terrible the bloodshed in Yerushalayim is, and we continue in the next paragraph. Lachain ko amar Hashem Elokim. Therefore, so says Hashem, Oy ir hadomim, gam ani agdil hamedura. I am going to make this the fire even bigger. Harbei ha'itzim, add wood to the flame. Hadleik ha'esh, light the fire. Hasem ha'basar, hasem from the language atam, meaning to finish, to be completed, to go away. Meaning, keep cooking the pot until all the meat is gone, is burned away, right? They thought that the pot was going to protect them, and instead some of them got taken out, and the ones that were still left, right, the dalas ha'am, the poor of the people that are still in Yerushalayim, what's happening to them, right? They're basically getting cooked inside the pot. That it's going to keep getting burned until even the bones that are in the pot turn to charred nothing. V'hamidel gachaleha reka, and keep the pot on the fire even after it's already empty. L'man techam, so that even the pot itself will get so hot. V'charan v'chushta v'nitecha b'sochat humasa, so that even the copper of the pot itself will become ruined by the fire. And maybe finally the tumah that was inside it, that was of course what Hashem is punishing the people for, will finally be burned away. And titom chalasa, and its stench will disappear. Tiunim helas, that's a rather difficult phrase that the Mefarshim have a little challenge with. It means something along the lines of that the misbehavior of the people brought this on. Okay, let's go skip the pasuk yugimel. Bitum aseich zima, because of the disgusting aspects of your tumah, yan tihartich velof tahart, I tried to purify you by sending you neviim, but you didn't. It didn't work. You didn't become tahor from your tumah. You didn't improve your behavior. Finally, the last pasuk there, ani Hashem dibarti, I've spoken, ba'av asisi, I've acted, lo efra velo achus velo anachem, I'm not going to have mercy. Hashem says, I'm judging you according to your own behavior. Okay. So that's a very graphic and difficult description of what Hashem is doing to Yerushalayim. It's a description of it's a rather apt description, apt mashal for a city under siege, right? That it just keeps the fire doesn't go away, it keeps going on and on and on. And everybody inside begins to suffer more and more and more, and the description of you know, flesh disappearing and then bone is even an almost literal description of the starvation that can go on in a city that's being besieged. But the thing that's very striking about this parsha is to remember whom this nevuah is being given to. Whom is Yechezkel speaking to? He at the beginning, he says, it says, Mashal al Beis HaMeri Mashal, to give this mashal to the rebellious people. And it's a description of the, you know, all these terrible things Hashem is that he's doing to you. But whom is Yechezkel speaking to? He's speaking to the Jews who are in Bavel, not to the Jews who are in Yerushalayim. So this whole description of what's happening, what's going to happen, is not actually happening to them, and he's describing the suffering as well as the sinfulness of the people who are in Bavel, and giving them this very graphic description, not to the people who are actually suffering in Yerushalayim. So we need to keep that in mind And we'll try to understand the significance of it in a moment or two. Okay, so let's now continue another few lines. The paragraph at the bottom of the page. Vayidvar Hashem elai lemor. Hashem spoke to me additionally. Ben Adam, hinni lokech mimchas machmad einecha b'magefa. He says, Hashem says, Yechezkel, I'm going to take the beloved, your beloved from you in a plague. And we're not going to read the rest of this paragraph. He tells him how later we find out that Yechezkel's wife dies, and Yechezkel is told not to show any of the normal signs of mourning, of avelos, in the wake of the death of his wife. In fact, this paragraph that ensues here is one of the main sources of the halachos of avelos. Now, if you look in Perek Elul Magalchen, the last Perek in Maseches Moikatan, where the halachos of avelos are developed, these few psukim, which describe what Yechezkel is not doing, imply what normally a person would do if they were in avelos, and a lot of those halachos come from here. And the message of that is that the people. Should when they are encountering the destruction of what's going on in Yerushalayim, should behave similarly. The idea being that normally a person acts. And this is the simple explanation. Normally a person acts in a certain way in avelos, and the other people who are not in avelos are comforting them. The idea here is that everybody's in avelos all at the same time, and nobody gets to comfort anybody, and they just have to face up to their being at fault. For what's going on. Okay, but let's now skip to the next paragraph in the middle of page 7, which is the last one we'll be doing here in this part of Yechezkel. Hashem then says to Yechezkel, "Ve'ata ben Adam, halo biyom kachti mehem es ma'uzam misos tifartam. On the day when I take from them their stronghold and the joy of their great splendor." Es machmare nehem, their beloved, v'es masan nafsham, b'nehem uvnosehem. On the day when this happens to the Jewish people, what's that a reference to? When I take away from them their stronghold and their splendor, that's a reference to the Churban HaBayis, right? When Yerushalayim is actually destroyed and the Beis HaMikdash is taken away, when that happens, and when they're taken, the b'nehem uvnosehem, the people who are left behind in Yerushalayim, b'yom hahu, on that day. Yavo ha-palit elecha al-hashmus az-nayim. A refugee from the Churban will come on that day for you to be able to hear what happened. Bayom ha-hu, and on that day, yipasach picha es ha-palit, your mouth will be opened, utidaber v'lo se'aleim od. You will speak and you will no longer be mute, no longer be silent. What happens is that, this is what I referenced briefly earlier, after this nevuah that we were just reading, Yechezkel has no more nevuah about the Jewish people until after the Churban HaBayis, right? He now becomes silent, and Hashem tells him, when the day comes, that after the Churban happens, a refugee will come to tell you about it, and only on that day will your mouth open again, will you have more to say? And in fact, this next several prakim in Yechezkel are all nevuos about other nations and not about the Jewish people. Okay. So that's the message that Hashem gives to Yechezkel. And notice, let's go back to the very beginning, and this is really what we started with. All of this is said to Yechezkel, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. Right? Hashem begins this nevuah by emphasizing to Yechezkel how particularly significant it is that this is happening today. He says, write down this day, I want you to remember, this is happening right now. And he gives him this whole very graphic and horrible, horrible nevuah. And it was apparently important that the Jews in Bavel know at the time that this was happening that it was happening. Well, now let's skip to the next important moment here on the last page, which is that moment that Hashem was referring to in this last pasuk. He says, when the time comes that the Churban HaBayis happens, a refugee is going to come to tell you about it. Okay, so well, a few prakim later in Yechezkel, that's exactly what happens. Perek Lamed Gimel, pasuk Chaf Aleph, in the middle of page 8. Vayehi b'shtei esrei shana ba'asiri b'chamisha l'chodesh l'galusenu. Bo elai ha'palit mi Yerushalayim. the refugee came from Yerushalayim Lemor to tell me, to say, Hukasahir, the city has been hit. And the next pasuk says, and the night before that, Hashem in fact had spoken to me for the first time. Okay. Now let's raise what really is the biggest question here, the mystery of this whole story, and then try to figure it out. How and when does Hashem tell Yechezkel about the beginning of the siege, about Asara B'Teves? And how and when does Hashem tell Yechezkel about the Churban HaBayis? So when it comes to Asara B'Teves, the beginning of the siege, Hashem appears directly to Yechezkel, gives him Nevuah, and says, this is happening right now. And that apparently was pretty important for Yechezkel and the Jewish people and Bavel to be told this is happening right now. But what happened in Tammuz and in Av when Yerushalayim was destroyed and when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? Hashem does not appear to Yechezkel. He doesn't tell him this is going on right now. Instead, he waits for some guy who managed to escape from Yerushalayim to make his way all the way to Bavel and tell Yechezkel about it. Apparently, it was really important for the Jewish people in Bavel to know immediately about the siege in Yerushalayim, but it wasn't important at all for them to know immediately about the Churban HaBayis. Well, why is that? In fact, it wasn't even important enough for Hashem to bother saying anything to Yechezkel about it. He just waited till some person showed up to tell him about it. And even more remarkable, let's take a more careful look at the timing. What year was it when Hashem appeared to Yechezkel and told him, this is Asara B'Teves, it's happening right today? That was in the ninth year of Golas Yehoyachin, right? The ninth year of Tzidkiyahu's reign in Teves. When does this palit, when does this refugee show up to tell Yechezkel about the Churban HaBayis? Vayehi b'shtei esrei shana, in the 12th year, ba'asiri b'chamisha l'chodesh, on the 5th of Teves, 3 years later. Okay? So, Asara B'Teves in the ninth year, there's a Nevuah, this is happening. On the 5th of Teves, almost exactly 3 years later, a refugee comes and tells Yechezkel that the Churban HaBayis happened. What's going on? Okay. So, first step to understand is to go back for a moment to Sefer Malachim. How long did the siege of Yerushalayim last? It started on Asara B'Teves, it ended on Shivasar, well, not Shivasar, but Shivasar B'Tammuz was Bayis Sheni, and Bayis Rishon, it was the 9th of Tammuz that the walls were breached. So from the 10th of Teves to the 9th of Tammuz, how long is that? Six months, right? Adar Nisan Iyar Sivan, Shvat Adar Nisan Iyar Sivan Tammuz, right? 6 months. Well, wrong, right? That's not what it was. Sorry? No, not quite. Not quite. So look at the pasuk at the bottom of page 4, in Sefer Malachim. Vehi b'shnasa tshi'is l'malcho, in the ninth year of Tzidkiyahu, b'chodesh asir b'asar l'chodesh, in the Asar B'Teves, that's the pasuk we read before. He built forts around Yerushalayim to besiege the city. And the city was besieged. Ad until when? Until the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu, B'tisha l'chodesh, in the 9th of the month, which we know from elsewhere was a reference to the month of Tammuz. Now, which means it was from the Asar Teves in the 9th year until Tammuz in the 11th year. Ah, right. So the answer is that the year starts in Nisan, probably, right? This was a year and a half. Okay, so it was from the 10th of Teves till the next 10th of Teves, which was the 10th year. And then the following summer, 6 months later, was already the 11th year. Okay? And so the siege of Yerushalayim didn't last for 6 months. Siege of Yerushalayim lasts for a year and 6 months, for a year and a half. the armies of Nebuchadnezzar besieged Yerushalayim, and the people in the city starved and starved and starved and starved. And we've all had the unfortunate experience of sitting through Eicha and Kinos, and we're familiar with the horrors and the degree of the starvation that happened in Yerushalayim during the course of the siege. And that happened not over the course of half a year, but over the course of a year and a half. And so it was in Tammuz and Av of the 11th year that this happened. So now, what happened with this refugee? So when that happened, the people in Bavel didn't know about it. Well, how long did it take the people in Bavel to find out about it? Shteyas reishanan, v'asiri b'chamishal achodesh, and a teves of the 12th year.
A year and a half later.
Sounds like a year and a half later. That's when the people in Bavel finally found out about the Churban HaBayis. Right? That sounds rather shocking. Okay. Now, it could be that one could play around with exactly what the year numbers mean, especially after the Churban. Maybe it was only 6 months and not a year and 6 months. That's not important for one way or the other, right? The point is that the people in Bavel didn't find out about the Churban HaBayis for a really long time after the Churban HaBayis. A refugee managed to get away and schlepped at some point all the way to... So when we realize that Hashem made such a point of appearing to Yechezkel when on Asar B'Teves and saying, this is happening right now, right? When it came to the actual Churban HaBayis, not only did he not tell him right now, but it was months and months and months before the people in Bavel ever found out about the Churban HaBayis. Isn't that even more important for the people in Bavel to find out about the Churban HaBayis? There's something obviously very significant going on here. And this emphasis twice in that pasuk of Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh is clearly something actually significant, right? And it's not surprising that later people quote this in some halachic context, as we mentioned before, that this Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh stands, it's not just the language, it's the actual substance stands in very stark contrast with the other fast days, and most prominently with what we now call Shivasar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, that they didn't find out about it till way later, and Hashem didn't bother telling them. So, which comes now to the key question, which is, so why is that? Why was it so important for the people in Bavel to be told about Asara B'Teves immediately, whereas when it came to Tisha B'Av, it wasn't important for them to be told immediately? And why was that terrible nevuah, that description of the pot and the bones and the right that was being addressed to the people in Bavel at the time of the beginning of the siege? So why do you think? Why was it so important for them to find out at the time of Asar B'Teves, but not so important for them to find out at the time about Tisha B'Av? Any ideas?
Well, at the beginning, maybe they do something juvenile.
Exactly, right? So why is this nevuah being said to the people in Bavel, right? I said it before, they're not the people who are going to be destroyed and starving in Yerushalayim, right? So the whole point of this nevuah is it's being said to them, don't think that you're not equally responsible for this, right? Just because you're not there, right? It's your people that's suffering. It's just because you're the important people and you were taken out earlier, and it's just the dalas am haaretz, right? The poor schleppers who were left behind, right? They're also, as the pasuk says later, b'neichem uvenoseichem, right? They're your children. They're part of your people, right? What happens when these people in Bavel are told about, what are they being told? They're being told about what's going to happen, right? The siege is starting today. A siege is not something whose significance is about what's happening that day, right? The siege is the beginning of something. People aren't hungry the minute the siege starts, right? People start getting hungry a little while after the siege starts, and then it gets worse and worse and worse until what we read about in Sefer Eicha happens. And so when the people in Bavel are told that, so they maybe, They can do something about it, right? Whether they can do something about it through tshuva, tefillah, and staka, or they can do something about it through political action in Bavel of some sort, and whether they can do something about it by trying to provide some direct assistance to the people in Yerushalayim, maybe there's something they can do. And so what there be the whole point of the nevuah that's being told to them is that this is your responsibility. It's not just the responsibility of the people in Yerushalayim. It's your fault also, and it's your achrayos, it's your responsibility to do something about it. Once the Churban happened, it was too late. What do they need to know about what happened in Yerushalayim when it's already over? The reason they need to know something about it is because at that point there might still be time to do something about it. It turned out there was a year and a half in which maybe they could have at least tried to do something about it. And so that was the message of the Nevuah to Yechezkel, why it was so important for it to be Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. Now, this has, recognizing this general appreciation of how long the matzor, how long the siege lasted, and its the significance of that in this context, that provides us with two very important elements of the meaning of Asara B'Teves. One of them is the following. I just made a point of saying that the tragedy, the catastrophe of Asara B'Teves wasn't on Asara B'Teves, right? Because the moment that the city was besieged, nobody was suffering yet, right? They had food to last for the next day or the next week or the next month. It was only as time went on that it started to get really, really bad. The following Asara B'Teves, a year after the siege started, that's when things were really, really awful, right? So it's rather ironic, right, that we fast on Asara B'Teves. That wasn't the real day of suffering. It was just the beginning, right? And yet, some of these Rishonim say that of all the fast days, Asara B'Teves is the one fast day that can never be on another day. Right? I might have argued the opposite. Asara B'Teves, what's the big deal? If you fast Shivasar B'Tammuz on the next day, well, that's not the day the event happens, so why should we fast on the 18th of Tammuz? But Asara B'Teves, maybe it's even better to fast the next day, because the next day it was worse than it was the day before. So why is it that according to certain Rishonim, we dafka have to fast on that day? So I think that perhaps misses the point. What is the significance of the siege? The significance of the siege is that, to be very simple, people starve. Right? People starve. They have nothing to eat. Well, what's a fast day? Tainus is a day in which we don't eat. Asara B'Teves is what I call the quintessential tainus, because it's the only tainus on which we refrain from eating in order to commemorate a time when the Jewish people suffered because they didn't have anything to eat. Unlike all of the other fast days in which we're commemorating a different kind of suffering. On Asara B'Teves, we're trying to remind ourselves of what it was like for the Jewish people to be starving. And perhaps it's for that reason, according to some, that Asara B'Teves always has to be Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. If Asara B'Teves comes out on Shabbos, you can't push it off to the next day. Why not? Because that would undermine the whole meaning of the fast day. If Tisha B'Av comes out on Shabbos, so you push it off to the next day, and the next day you can also remember the Churban Habayis. But on Asara B'Teves, when we're fasting on Asara B'Teves and we're feeling hungry, we're actually trying to remind ourselves what it was like for Jewish people to be hungry. Well, what if what happened on Shabbos in the middle of the siege of Yerushalayim? Did the people push off their not eating till Sunday because it was Shabbos? Right? No, part of the whole experience of Asara B'Teves is to remember what it was like to not have any food. When people are starving because they don't have any food, they can't push it off till tomorrow. Pushing it off till tomorrow would itself be an undermining of an appreciation of what this fast is about. Because when you don't have food, you can't push it off till tomorrow. What do you mean push off Asara B'Teves? So there's this great irony in which Asara Bateves is Be'etzim Hayom Hazeh, Dafka, this day, even though that day the suffering hadn't started yet, it was just the launching of something, which was really every day for the whole year, for a year and a half, right? But the idea of pushing it off undermines the meaning of the times. In their last couple of minutes, there's another element to this as well. this moment, the time of Galus Yehoyachin, let me restart a different way. We're so used to the fact, because we've been living it for 2,000 years in Galus, right? We're used to the fact that the Jewish people are Ba'arbakanfos Aretz, right, all over the world. And there are some Jews over there and some Jews over there. And for most of history, there were some Jews in Eretz Yisrael, right? And some Jews in Chutz La'aretz, right? But we should recognize that the time of Galus Yehoyachin was, in a certain sense, the very first time in Jewish history when part of the Jewish people was in Eretz Yisrael and another part of the Jewish people was living as a community somewhere else. Now, of course, there was the previous Galus of the Aseres HaShvatim, of the northern kingdom of Israel, and those Jews vanished without a trace. They didn't retain a sense of Jewish community. So there wasn't a Jewish community living elsewhere and a Jewish community in Israel, in Eretz Yisrael. You have to go all the way back, basically, to the Parshios HaShavua that we've been reading now, about Yosef and Yaakov, right, to a time when some of the family was in Eretz Yisrael and some of the family was in Chutz La'aretz. It's this moment of Galus Yehoyachin when the Jewish people were split. Some of them were in exile, some of them were in Eretz Yisrael. And we're so used to the notion that, well, when some of us are in Israel and some of us are out of Israel, that we are still one people that are responsible for each other and that care about each other and have to do things for each other and protect each other. But that was not at all a given, right? It's this Nevuah of Yechezkel that we read today that taught us this lesson. What would have happened if not for this Nevuah of Yechezkel? The Jewish people exiled in Bavel, and then there's the people in Eretz Yisrael, and okay, they've been exiled. Now they're not in Eretz, not part of that nation anymore, and they'll move on to something else. And whoever's left behind is left behind. But Hashem said to Yechezkel and Yechezkel community, to the people, no, you are still responsible for what's left of the Jewish people in Yerushalayim. And what's happening to them is both your fault and your achrayus. And you have to do something about it if you can. And that's your job. And that's why I'm telling this to you, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. Because I'm telling you what's going to happen, and you've got to go do something about it. And this time, whether we have no knowledge of what they did at that moment, right? But certainly, throughout the course of Jewish history, this is a message that was heeded, right? And that group of Jews in Bavel at that time remained connected and remained identified as part of the same Jewish people as the people who were in Yerushalayim. And when the final Gullus happened, even though since that moment until Ad Hayom Hazeh, there have been communities of Jewish people in Israel as well as in Chutz La'aretz. Of course, even in Bayis Sheni, most of the Jewish people was not in Eretz Yisrael. And we have managed to maintain this idea that Jews in one place and Jews in another are responsible for each other. And in fact, we often, Baruch Hashem, have been successful in caring for each other. Other times, not so much. But this is the other centrally significant meaning of Asara Bateves, of more overarching significance beyond just what seems often like a more minor fast day, is that as Asara Bateves, which represents the moment that the global Jewish people maintained its identity as a global Jewish people that cares for, protects, and is responsible for one another. Thank you.